listeners. You're listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week, we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We're your hosts, Sam Collier.
And Sarah Cho. And we're back for season 5. Sorry it took us so long, but you know, having a baby and reliving my life. So we're back.
Yeah. It's May. We're recording this in May.
Yeah, we usually record in February.
Well, what happened in February?
Well, out from my womb, I birthed a child. He's very cute. I love him so much. Aww. His name is August. We call him Augie. And yeah, he's the best. He's 3 months old now, so he started to do some tummy time. He can, you know, lift his neck up, and he kind of rolls on his back and starts freaking out. What happened? Yeah, very, very cute.
Well, do you want to say anything about the choice of name for your child?
No.
Okay. Never mind.
I feel like I just, like, told everyone, but I guess I didn't tell everyone on the show, but
they don't need to know.
They don't need to know, but you could probably guess.
Cool. And yeah, so you're a mother now. You have a literal baby.
Yeah. Yep. It's brings this show's name to a whole new level. There's an actual baby here. It's so funny. What?
Well, I was just going to say, here's a question.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want this child to go into a life in the theater?
So 1 to 10?
Yeah. Like 10 being you really want this child to go into the theater, and 1 being, oh, hell no.
Here's the thing. Like, I want him to love theater, like appreciate theater, go to theater.
I can see where this is
even
going.
School, you know, like participate in community theaters or whatever, and like,
yeah, like he can make puppet shows.
Yeah, like I think because theater really does teach collaboration, and I love that and artistically and whatever. But no, just kidding. Well, here's the thing: my husband Nick, he's very opposed to like pursuing the arts. As someone who pursued the arts, he's very anti. I'm like, let's be flexible. Let's be open. Let's just see. Because you don't know what life will be like in 20, 10 years or whatever. So,
yeah,
you know, things might change. Art might make a comeback. Who knows? There's so much funding. There's so much lucrative. There's so much money that everyone just hops onto it. So, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. I do think I think it's important that I want him to have a balance of understanding of like the arts, sciences, everything. You know, like I want him to be interested and curious about everything.
A real Renaissance man.
Yes. A real Renaissance man.
Well, that sounds healthy.
Yeah.
And balanced.
Yeah. And you know, it's like I can't not expose him to theater because like you look around my room, everywhere's like plays everywhere. There's everything in he'll have access to it. So he's like, what the hell is this? And you know what? Kids want to do opposite of parents. So he'll probably be like, mom is nutso. So I'm going to go into theater.
How funny would it be if you tried to like keep theater from him? Like,
yeah.
Like raise him as if he didn't know what that was. And then one day he found out and he's like, you didn't tell me?
How could you? You lie. You liar.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. I would love that. And I'd be like, keep talking. I'm going to write this all down. Until really.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What about you, Sam? What have you been up to?
Well, I'm just about done with my coursework for my PhD, which feels really good to say. I'm technically done with all the requirements for the coursework for my degree, but I'm going to take one more class just because I can't get enough.
Wow.
I know. But that's for – I'm doing a certificate in environmental justice, and so I just have one more class for the certificate. But in terms of my my PhD in theater and performance studies, I'm done with all my required courses. So from here on out, I'm just going to be doing my comps and then writing my prospectus, which is like my plan for my dissertation. Wow. And then I'm going to be writing my dissertation for the next 3 years.
That's
and
it.
Teaching.
Oh, and teaching.
And teaching, yeah.
But taking classes are done?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that feels good because so this summer I have to read like 60 books. And I should say it's books and articles, and some of them are plays. So it's not quite as daunting as it sounds. Mm-hmm. But basically, I've put together a list with my professors about all the books that I want to be really familiar with going into my comps, my comprehensive exams, which entails 10 days writing 3 essays based on all these books. So... yeah. So, and I've pretty much landed on what I want my dissertation to be about is interspecies collaboration and non-human perspectives in climate change theater. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of drawing together these different schools of thought and areas of performance practice to develop this work, this research.
As soon as you said that, and I don't know if because I have a mom brain now, I just thought of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh my God, Winnie the Pooh is such a good example. Yeah, those are non-human perspectives. But then again, are they? Or are they just like people speaking through?
Oh, it's creative form. Human. These are human perspectives, but
yeah,
the imagination of the thought of the idea of it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, what's so interesting about Winnie the Pooh is you're able to access those animal voices through the mind of a child. Mm-hmm, so, right. It's kind of interesting to think about how we really accept children speaking to animals as if that's like totally normal for kids. Mm-hmm. But like if an adult starts saying, oh, I can talk to animals, it's kind of pathological, you know, or kind of woo woo and out there. So It's something is very normal for children, but then kind of abnormal in adults. That's kind of interesting to think about.
So you said 60 books and articles and plays, but is that the number you have to come up with, or that's just a number that – I mean, like as you're making your list that it came
out? Well, it's the number you're supposed to go for. And to be honest, like I have so many more that I want to include, so – any day now I'm expecting to get told, no, you have to keep it to 20 per list because I have like 23 on each list. Wow. So I have to actually cut it down. But yeah.
Oh my God.
It's a new way of doing things. It used to be – this is only like the second year they're doing it this way because it used to be that you had to be familiar with a list of canonical sources. And this is still how it is, I think, in many PhD theater programs. But our faculty decided a couple years ago that they wanted to overhaul the process because a lot of books in the canon don't necessarily line up with the kind of research people want to do now. So now we have this system where you come up with a list together with a professor. So yeah.
All I could see is just sitting and reading. And
I know. And that's what it's been so far. And honestly, I am loving it. It's so much fun. I just feel so lucky to get to spend days on end just reading. Although the books I've kind of started off with in the past week have been pretty depressing because I'm starting off with some of the early books about climate change.
Yeah.
And it's just really sad to think about if we had made very easy changes in the 1980s, relatively painless changes, we would be in such a different in such a different situation right now.
Yeah.
And so much possibility was lost.
Yep. So I guess all these bugs is making very like linger in the past.
Well, it's a mix. Yeah, my lists are kind of a mix of the really dark and despairing, and then also the like more hope. Yeah,
promising,
the hopeful, and thinking about what we can do, even in the face of so much grief and loss.
Okay, so I'm so curious about your thoughts on this, because I've been listening to a bunch of podcasts, and there's this idea that there's this group of people, or like a small population of people, pushing for more babies, like babies in the world.
Who are these people?
These are just like some, I don't know, like some scientists, some thinkers and all that, like people who are just like, and they're all men.
They're not actually having the babies.
They're not actually having the baby. But they're all saying that we need more people, because more people incite ideas and thinking. Thoughts?
I mean, it's an interesting idea, sure. But it kind of, I don't know. I'm guessing a lot of these people are from like very wealthy countries. Mm-hmm. The thing is, there are so many people already in the world who probably have incredible ideas and are very, you know, could solve so many problems and are living in extreme poverty and not able to go to school. So it's like, I don't know. I have some skepticism.
Because I guess the thinking is that, you know, there's food scarcity, there's like water, you know, things that are just the resources that are depleting, but it's forcing people to like, okay, we have to innovate here. And then there's people involved and more people, humans and stuff, they're like, they're coming up, which is really funny. It's like, these are problems we created coming up with a solution. Yeah. But it's like,
it's an interesting theory.
Cyclical cycle. But yeah, so that's just like, I don't know. I was like, this is such a crazy, I'm like, this is crazy. Things are just crazy ideas.
Well, it just feels like that's not really something we haven't already tried. Like, we already have a lot of people, and there are people coming up with very innovative ideas already.
Yeah.
So.
But also people are getting dumber. Oh my God.
I don't know. Anyone in particular that you want to name?
No, I'm not going to name, not on this show. No way.
No, let's not go there. Well, have you seen any shows recently? I imagine having a newborn makes that really difficult.
No. Let me see. So, yeah, it really is difficult. Because plans, right? I was like, I declared, you know, I did this thing of like, I declared in the room wherever Nick is. It's like, on May 15th, I'm going to see a play. I'm putting in our Google Calendar. Here's my declaration. And then please keep me accountable, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I think it was, like, last weekend on Saturday, Nick and I, we did this thing. We were going to plan, like, okay, so I'm going to see a reading Saturday night. So if I'm going to do that, I'll watch the baby during the day. Nick, if you want to go watch Guardians of the Galaxy, go for it. You know, like, so we kind of looked, so we took turn. And come Saturday, you know, Nick already bought his ticket. He's heading out. And then he comes back. I was like, yeah, I don't want to go to the room. I'm just going to stay here. I'm tired.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, you're like, no, take a nap. And then, like, go. And I'm just like, no, I'm just going to cancel my ticket. I just can't. Just like the idea.
But did
of, like,
he say, no, you made me promise to make you go?
No. I was just so tired. I was just like, I'm taking a shower now. I'm like, I know.
Given the choice between going to see a show and resting when you're extremely tired.
Exactly. Yeah, and the reading, you know, in a lot of plays, like during the evening, matinees are very rare, you know. So I'm like, I don't know. There's also it's Fringe Festival's coming up, and I have some friends who have a show, so maybe I'll try to see a matinee this, you know, coming week, but we'll see. But all your reading reminded me that, so before I had the baby, I had this like New Year's resolution of I'm gonna watch 300 movies and read one book a week. Movies has been okay. I've been doing
movies okay. Yeah, well, because you can sit and watch a movie while you're holding the baby.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I was reading one book a week. I was literally finished. I finished a book right as I was getting into labor. Like, I was on it.
Whoa. What was it? Do you think the book made you go into labor?
No. No. That did
what was
not.
The book?
I can't even remember now. But I've been trying, but I was reading one book a week. I feel like maybe it's in my, I've been trying to keep track of it and Goodreads. But I was reading one book a week, and then all of a sudden, obviously stopped.
Yeah.
Now it's like one book every
week. I just remember the first couple of weeks you were just so exhausted because you weren't sleeping.
Yeah, the first month is the hardest. Like, yeah. People say it's hard, but I didn't realize how hard it was until, like, actually experiencing it. But the first month, the baby is, like, wanting to eat every 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
I'm, like, and I'm trying to nurse him. And, you know, I mean, breastfeeding is, like, a whole other thing that, you know.
Yeah.
Its own difficulties. And so I'm like trying to nurse him. We're trying to formula feed him, but he's like vomiting. We're like, and he's just like, he's like not gaining weight like he's supposed to in the first few days. And we're just like, the pediatrician's like, okay, come back next weigh in. Like, you know, making us come back like every 4 days to weigh him, you know?
Wow.
So he's
yeah,
on the
just
right
like
track.
Keeping this baby alive.
Yeah.
When you haven't done anything like that before, that must be so overwhelming.
Yeah. And then now it's insane. So I guess he's got to be like 18, 19 pounds now. And
wow,
he goes to bed at 7, not every night, but like most nights he's been going at 7 and kind of sleeping through most of the night. He'll wake up once for diaper change or feeding, but then he sleeps. So it's been
amazing.
Much. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. We could get some like few hours of sleep here. But yeah. It's that first month was hard, but yeah, wow. I was trying to do that reading but right now I'm reading The Science of Storytelling.
Ooh, what's that?
I'm
like?
Not gonna say much. I can't. I literally one chapter in. I don't.
It sounds good though.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, so far it's looking
it
at
sounds so much more mathematically enjoyable than The Uninhabitable Earth, which is what I'm reading.
Yeah, I would just go into depressed mode. Like,
yeah. Wow. So it's about, like, the scientific
kind of like,
aspects of it?
Almost, yeah. Like, looking at it, what is making the brain sort of, like, make these connections and, you know, the way the story is written or the way the story is being told. Like, really breaking it down and being like, well, you know, the mind, the way it wants to see it, it's filmic, the way it's written, it should be this way. Like, this is why the brain is forced to connect these ideas together, you know, like, so cool. Just kind of looking at it that way. Yeah. So it's been interesting. But I've been trying to go like fiction and nonfiction going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this semester, as usual, I way overcommitted myself, and I just can't learn. I just don't learn. But I started the year directing this play by Madhuri Shekhar called Antigone, presented by the Girls of St. Catharines, which I really love this play. Highly recommend it, listeners. And it's about a group of high school girls in the 90s in a Catholic boarding school who are putting on a production of Antigone, and they experience this terrible betrayal and have to decide what to do. And so, and I directed that in our main stage season here in February. And that was such a great experience. And then and it's really only the second production I've ever directed, but I really have caught the bug. I want to keep directing.
Wow.
I know. And I mean, it's just so fun. I just love, I kind of was thinking about my job as similar to a curator, you know, like the designers and the actors and, you know, all the people on the team bring you these ideas and they're kind of being creative in their own ways. And you get to just be like, yeah, do more of that. Or this is a really cool idea. Keep going in that direction. So yeah, I just had so much fun doing that. And then I was, and then I produced our new play festival here at CU Boulder. So we had 9 brand new plays, a mixture of full lengths and one acts and 10 minutes. And this new play festival here at CU Boulder was actually, I believe it was first started or co-started by Sarah Johnson, who we know from Iowa because she did her Emmett Van dramaturgy there, and then she did a PhD here at CU Boulder. So very cool that it's still going strong. And we have this partnership with local theater company, which is actually the name of it. It is a local theater company, but it's also called Local Theater Company. And they have a local lab every year, which is their new play festival. And one of our CU Boulder playwrights had a play in our new play festival a year ago, and it was actually then done at local lab this year. So it was very cool to see the playwright's name is Sarah Powers, get to kind of continue developing this play that she first wrote as a student here.
Wow.
So yeah, lots of new plays happening.
I was going to say the show photos, that show you directed.
Of Antigone, presented by the
Girls. Oh my God. It's like gorgeous.
Thank you. I was so happy with it. Yeah. I mean, so Jonathan Spencer is on the faculty here. He's a designer and design faculty. And he designed the scenic design and the lighting design. And we were in this. So we were in this old proscenium theater that is actually in what was the first building on the CU campus. I think it was built in like the 1870s or something. Wow. And we were in that space because our theater was offline all year because they were doing construction. So it was kind of perfect. I mean, part of the reason I wanted to do this particular play and I pitched it for this season was when I saw that theater. It's like this little jewel box theater with a very clear proscenium arch. It just seemed so perfect for a story set in a high school where they're putting on a play in like a high school auditorium or chapel. And so one of the things Jonathan brought to the set was he built this rose window to go on the back wall. And his goal was to make it look like it was part of the building, like it was built into the wall. And some of the people who saw the show actually asked me if that was part of the building. But then what he did, which was so cool with the lighting, was he had some colors behind the window so it could change color depending on the mood of the scene.
Oh, that's cool.
So people kind of realized as the play went on that it wasn't a real window because the colors were changing.
Oh, that is so cool. No, I was wondering. It was so beautiful. It looked like a real window. Like,
I know. Yeah, like, it looks like – because you're in kind of this chapel and
right.
It looks like – yeah, he had the – production team build this whole false wall that the window was in. So when they loaded it in, it kind of lined up with the wall that was existing and blended in. So it looked like it was part of the building. But yeah, I was really, really happy with that. And then we had this incredible student costume designer, Soph Morris, who made the costumes and got really into developing this school crest. And so Soph created like school colors and what the crest would look like and put it on all the uniforms. And then Jonathan put the crest on some of the scenic elements. So it was just like, I don't know, it was so cool to work with designers who were so invested in telling this story and brought so much creativity to it.
Wow. That's awesome. Wish I could seen it in person, but again,
we're busy experiencing life's greatest miracle,
something like that. But that's really cool. Oh man, yeah, the show photos look like you put the production in the like a chapel, like this was
yeah
was in a chapel.
Yeah, I mean it. The I think it's actually called a chapel in Old Main.
Oh, it is.
It's like a theater and also feels like a chapel. But we tried to increase that sense, intensify that sense. But I mean, it's such a good play. I really recommend reading the play. When I first was looking for plays to pitch as a director, I started reading this and I just like could not stop reading because it kind of draws upon the structure of Antigone in its storytelling in that, you know, this character has to make a really difficult choice. She's torn between her different loyalties. But the forward momentum of the story and the feeling I had, I mean, my heart was in my throat the first time I read it because I was like, oh no, it is not going to go that way. Oh no, it's not going to go that way. You know, like until the last minute of the play, you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it had been so long since I had read a play like that because I don't know. I read so many plays where it's almost like so many playwrights are afraid to make you think that they are going to go in a dangerous direction or a problematic direction, that they kind of make it really obvious what their beliefs are and how they're going to stick to those beliefs throughout the story.
But
this play, you know, it was not afraid to like take go into directions. The ambiguity. Yeah. And make you wonder, like, are these people going to do the right thing or are they not going to do the right thing? I really recommend it.
Cool. So I guess we're kind of coming to the end here.
Before we go into Glisten, should we talk about like what our hopes are for the rest of the year or what we want to work on?
Personally?
Yeah.
I just want to survive. I just want to survive. No. Let's see. You can go first. Anything
you want to say? Okay. Well, yeah. What do I want to –
personal, creative goals. I want to
read a bunch and do well in my comps. But setting aside that looming journey, I would really like to write a new play this year. And I'm just going to put this out into the universe, you know. I want to write a new play about climate change. I've been saying that for a while, but I think some things are starting to kind of coalesce in my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to say that out loud. Yeah. I want to write a new play about climate change.
Nice. You will, because it's kind of who you are now and it's who you are and what you're studying, and you will. I believe in you.
Thank you.
I don't know. For me, I feel like I'm just trying to take baby steps back and it's like I'm trying to figure out this new life schedule, like when do I have time? Like, and I'm prioritizing, like sometimes I was like, I need to exercise, you know, time has become so precious. So like, you know, before the baby, I was on a sketch team and we would do like monthly shows, right? Like that sounds so luxurious that I had the time to like do a half hour show every month and meet up with my team every week and write sketches during the week. Now I've on this like hoo-ha-ha website, I just like found this listing and this girl was making this podcast, like a topical news podcast. And I was looking for writers just kind of help contribute. So I've just been submitting 2 jokes a week. Like that's sort of like my capacity when it comes to the comedy side. I'm like 2 jokes a week, I could do it. Just do it right before I go to bed, you know, try to write some jokes here based on headlines. And then so I've been doing that.
And then if writing, is it like, but, so you're submitting your jokes to
I guess she'd be like the head writer, I guess, of this podcast. She's the host of the podcast, so I just kind of like submit a couple of jokes
and then does she pick some?
She picks, she rewrites them, she makes it whatever makes sense.
Cool.
And then she just there's like, I think there's like 6 of us. I could, if I wanted to, and this is my next big goal, is if I come up with like a correspondent bit, like a, you know, mm-hmm. a 1 minute thing that I'll write in the perspective of correspondent and record it as my, you know, as a character, and then send it to her. And
oh my gosh, that sounds so fun.
That's my next goal. If I have this like idea, a couple of like, there's this, a couple of ideas I have is like, what is it, like a correspondent who is like, don't want to talk about culture, but like not culture in like in the sense, I don't know, I'm still like yeah. trying to figure out what to do. Or there's this correspondent who is all about talking about climate change or like, you know, like global environment, stuff like that, but she keeps reminding the audience that she comes from a local like hometown, like from like, even though she's talking, her topic, her ideas about talking about the global world,
yeah,
she keeps wanting to remind you, but I'm from a small hometown. I'm a local girl.
Is she from Michigan?
Could be from Michigan. Could be from,
I don't know. It just sounds very Michigan.
Yeah, doesn't it? Something Midwestern. But that's just something I've been thinking
about. That's great.
And then in terms of plays, I don't think I have the brain to want. I've been taking a lot of notes, but I don't know if I could write a whole new play, even though I want to. But I've been revisiting my old plays and, like, rewriting it. Like, I feel like just kind of, like, that feels like what I can do. Feels doable. Just page by page, just rewriting. But, yeah. Man, I don't know. People say babies are great. I love babies. I love my son. Jesus, it really is. It's like, man, it's just really turns your life upside down a little.
Yeah.
You're just having to reprioritize. And everyone keeps telling me, like, it'll get easier. You know, once you start school, man, so much time.
It's just like, yeah.
It gets easier. So I'm like waiting for that easy part to come around. So
I think about somewhere Sarah Ruhl has written about, it might be in her book, 100 Essays I Don't Have Time to Write, or it might be somewhere else, but she wrote about when she found out she was pregnant with twins and how she just was like, oh my god, I'm never gonna write again.
You know, it feels like that,
just that fear.
Yeah, I think it's because I'm constantly worrying about my baby. Like, I'm constantly thinking, like, is he fed? Is his diaper changed? Why is he grunting? Why is he?
Yeah. So
mentally, my mental capacity is just all focused on the baby. And it's only when he naps, I'm like, all right, I got 40 minutes. What can I do in my 40 minutes? Should I eat? Should I exercise? Should I just, like, quickly read something? Like, what can I do in this 40 minutes? Or I'll just, like, lie down next to him and watch him sleep. You know, I'm like.
But that's just, I mean, sometimes that's what you need, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I would love to have parents on the show. How you do it? Tell playwrights who are parents, come on to the show.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to us. All right. Let's move on to Glistens.
Okay. You go first.
All right. So, so I mentioned that one of my resolutions with this year was to read 50 books. So I was reading, I think I read like at least 10 books till the baby was born.
Wow.
And then
starting in January, you read 10
starting
books?
Starting in January. Yeah. I was able to like read. Yeah. But I think it was about 10 books. Or maybe it was like 8. Maybe it was 9. And I read the baby and I was like, I'm going to get back to reading. But I was like, realized that I'm like, oh, I read those books and there were lines or there were just like string of thoughts I was like, I really liked, but I just read it. I didn't write it down anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I don't know how YouTube found out I was interested in this, but the algorithm worked. And then I saw people doing these commonplace journaling or notebooks. And I looked online and I was like watching some videos. I'm like, what's this? And so it's basically just, I feel like it's what I've been doing, you know, just taking note, having a notebook, a journal, and just taking notes. But the commonplace is more intentional. Like, I'm really, instead of just like jotting down, I'm actually having a place like, oh, this is going to be the place where I want to put lines of a book that I really liked, and I'm going to write it down in here. You know, it's a little more intentional.
And have you – I remember reading a couple of years ago about how you can create, like, a whole index in a commonplace book. Have you been doing that?
Yeah. Kind of like bullet journaling, right?
Yeah,
like, I haven't done that quite yet, but I think I will, because it's like right now I'm reading a book, The Science of Storytelling, and I'm like – kind of jotting down some lines I really like there. And mm-hmm. so I think I'll do that and then be like, well, you know, from pages one to whatever, how long ever this section's going to be was from this book, you know?
Yeah, yeah. From
this book. So, yeah, so I think I'll do that cool. as like just a reference. Or I also have these like washi tapes or these little index sort of post-its kind of thing. And I could mm-hmm. just put it, throw it in and label it itself, you know?
Cool.
So I might do that
too. I just love paper. I'm so glad people are still using paper.
Yeah, there's just something about like organizing. I mean, like writing and then with pen and paper just so much. I was like, oh, I feel like I'm digesting this so much better.
Yeah.
I also, my note, God, I'm such a type A. God, freaking A. So in my notes app, this is what's happening, right? So baby goes to sleep. I'm like, I want to be productive, but I don't know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And I only have 40 minutes. And so, or even late at night, I'm like staying up till like 1 a.m. or something, just doing whatever I want. But my notes app, I had like 1,000 notes and I was able to organize it.
Whoa.
And it's now to 398. I have 4 files called, and I followed this, and I found this other YouTube. It's called Para. Nick is like laughing at me. It's called Para, and it's 4 categories called projects, areas, resources, and archive.
Whoa.
So I've like organized just like the projects are like what you're currently working on or what you want to work on, and you sort of create a folder and you start taking notes into that. Areas is sort of like your personal responsibilities. Like I have an Augie folder, a medical folder, and my personal info folder. And all the notes went there. Resources is R for resources is like what you're curious about, what you want to learn, or something that'll be helpful to you. So I have like health, wellness, recipes, self-improvement. Like those are my folders. And then archive is like whatever you've done, you just put it there in there, but you don't delete it, so you could go back to it. So my freaking – oh my God, I'll
That's take so a snapshot cool.
and I'll send it to you still because you'll be like, you're nuts.
No, I want to see it because I'm really in awe of you because I have so many notes and my notes app is just such a mess.
Yeah.
And I know there are useful things in there. I mean, mostly I write down like when I'm talking to someone and they suggest a book or if I'm reading something or listening to something, I'll write down something I hear. But if you don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It'll just start like piling and your notes just starts growing. So it's like as soon as you write it, you sort of like file it away into the areas that will be helpful to you. This is a YouTube that I found. This clip was just talking about using these systems, these organizing system. Think of it as this is your second brain. Like make it easy for you. This is why Note app was created for this, you know, like so so I really like it. It's been so I literally spent like 2 hours before I went to bed organizing this. And then as soon as Nick woke up, I was like, I did something amazing. He was like, what? And then I organized my notes. And he was like, oh my God, you're crazy. Like, go to bed when you're supposed to. But now I feel like my life feels organized in this chaos. And so.
Yeah. He's just jealous.
Yeah. But yeah, in my commonplace notebook, I found a notebook that I really love. It's like the paper's nice and thick. I found it at Target. It's called – and it's Wit and Delight Journal Notebook. It's like lined like a paper. And it's like I freaking love using this. And then, you know, I love a notebook that lays flat when you open it.
Yeah.
And so it's like that's what it is. And so it's like I want to make my commonplace notebook like, oh, this is a book that I'd want to go to and visit. And now pass it down to Augie. What is this gibberish? But that's so the cool. thinking. So, yeah.
No, so you know what? That's actually really cool because my dad told me recently that he just found like in the basement the journals that my mom took on their honeymoon. And I was like, oh my God, I want to read that. So I think like, you know, one day Augie's going to discover that you had this journal you kept when he was 3 months old. And he's going to want to read that.
I hope so. Or he'll burn it. Be like,
well, you have to wait till he's past his teenage years.
Right.
Wait till he's 30. Then you can have it.
I do have a journal that I've been journaling every day since I found out I was pregnant.
Whoa.
Let me tell you, I was like looking back at it and I was like, you could tell when my hormones was crazy. When my hormones came down, something like it's all over the place. So I have to, I think when at the last page of this journal, I have to preface and or like, or add a little post being like, you know what? My hormones, 85%, like 90% of the everything I said, I don't really mean it, okay?
So. Oh gosh, I'm afraid to ask.
All right, what's your glisten?
My glisten is a podcast I listened to last weekend that is so, so good. It's by Bianca Gaver, and it's the second season of a podcast called The Constellation Prize. Mm-hmm. And this season is called Night Walking. It's four episodes. You can listen to the whole thing probably in like 2 or 3 hours. And it's about a project she did with the poet and writer Terry Tempest Williams, mm-hmm. in 2020, in which they both went walking at night. And then told each other about it. But it, I mean, just the way it's organized and edited really, really well. And Bianca Gaver is such a good like host and writer. It's, I mean, it's, I really, really highly recommend it.
Yeah. Is it, so Bianca's interviewing or is,
well,
conversations or?
It's, I don't want to give away too much, okay. Because part of what, because in the first episode, you kind of discover what the shape of it is going to be. Mm. But she's the host of it. And she's also in conversation with Terry Tempest Williams. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds good. I want to check it out.
Oh, it's really good. Yeah, that's my glisten.
Well, that was our first episode of this new season.
Season 5, everybody.
I can't believe it. We've been doing this for 5 years. I can't believe it. And also, we're learning that there's people who actually listen to this. Like,
yeah.
I am kind of stunned that we got some fans and supporters out there and loves us and appreciate that.
We don't want to say we're too stunned. We don't want to make them feel bad about listening to us. Like, thank you, everybody, for your support.
Yeah, we're chill. We're so chill.
I think, if anything, we're just really humbled.
Yeah. That's it.
And right. We hope you'll keep listening for many years to come.
Yeah. Maybe when Augie is like a teenager, I'll bring him on. I'm like, so what's been the first 10 years of your life with me? How has it been?
It's never too soon to bring him on. I'm sure we would all love to hear from him now.
Yeah, it's a lot of babbling. Right. Until next time.
All right, Sarah. Bye. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.